Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access mobile network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 56 for December 6, 2010. This is Michael Law.
And I'm Ricky Anger.
Well, Ricky, it's been out almost 2 weeks. It's DocuScan Plus, and I know you did a segment on Main Menu.
Main Menu.
Yes, that will be playing on the December 3rd show of Main Menu with Jamie Pauls. Also got a lot of other good stuff in that show. I believe Chase Crispin covers a couple of things, and Stephen Guerra demonstrates the Moshi clock, and I talk a lot about DocuScan Plus, so it's definitely worth checking out.
Definitely. If you haven't heard yet, DocuScan Plus, it might have went by with the holidays. We did a podcast right before the evening before Thanksgiving. The first online OCR solution and conversion of your scanned documents and even PDF files into Braille, large print, Daisy Books, MP3 audio, RTF format, and even the conversion of text from PDF images, all for just $299. Check it out at DocuScanPlus.com. We were all taking advantage of Christmas deals, and I saw a cool one, a blind bargain, $63 for a Panasonic 4-handset cordless phone, but I learned something very valuable. That unfortunately, the new ones, just because they say talking caller ID, what that means in some cases, and in a particular phone I got, is that the only way that those numbers will speak is if they are entered into the phone book of the phone.
Oh, ouch. That's unfortunate, because I do have a Panasonic handset model, which did come with 4 handsets, and the packaging did say talking caller ID, and I was lucky enough that it works just as you would think it would. It speaks the incoming number. If you have someone assign custom ringtones on that phone and you enter a name, it will speak that name, but by default, it just speaks whatever caller ID sends it.
Okay, do you have to enable something in a menu?
I don't recall, because I got mine about 6 months ago, and I believe you do have to turn something on.
Okay, so maybe I'm not out of luck yet, because I'm happy with phone numbers. I know most numbers when I hear who they belong to, so we'll see. But just be mindful of that, folks, that some of the phones don't speak anything unless there's information entered into the actual phone book of the device, which we're not going to be able to do without sighted help. So check that out next time you hear about a phone with talking caller ID. Ricky, very sad story here. 4 boys locked in their dormitory room in a South African school for the blind while the building caught on fire, ranging in ages from 8 to 13. They were found huddled against the door. Now there's an investigation going on to see if this was a regular practice to lock students in their rooms from the outside.
Yeah, this is incredibly sad, and I can't think of any logical reason for students to be locked in, and I hope they get to the bottom of this during the investigation.
Yeah, probably one of the most retweeted stories that I'd ever posted, and rightfully so, because this is a very sad situation, unacceptable. Read more about it at Serotalk.com. Actually, this is not the first one, but a comedian, after losing his eyesight in 2008, now makes fun of his blindness. This gentleman's name's Eric Mee, and he says, "My parents don't ground me anymore. They just rearrange the furniture." "I used to think people stare at blind people because they can get away with it, but I figured out that watching a blind person is like watching NASCAR. They're just waiting for the crash." And here's one that's kind of controversial. It's got a few folks up in arms. "My friends mess with me all the time. They even spike my drinks. Have you ever seen a blind guy walking when he's sober? He stumbles enough, but get him drunk and you've really got a show." How do you feel about that one, Ricky?
I knew that this one would be controversial. I think that people are going to say, hey, this is not representative of blind people as a whole, and this is going to give the impression that blind people are bumbling idiots and things like that. But I think that he is speaking what is real to him, and it's important that he be able to do that. we can't come out and say, this is how you must represent blind people as a whole, because we are individuals, and if we want to be treated as such, we have to allow people to express themselves in whatever way they see fit. And again, this is real to him. It may not represent you as a blind person, but if you have an issue about that and you think that the public is being misinformed in that regard, I'm sure there are lots of funny people among us, and you guys can step forward and represent your own experiences.
I do know that even in nursing school, nurses are taught, and I'm sure all medical students are taught, that blind folks, a good percentage of them, also have issues related to their equilibrium. So there's some correlation between blindness and many people having their equilibrium altered, thereby maybe increasing one's ability to stumble or having issues with balance and coordination. So a little controversy there. I want to invite folks to listen to Tech Chat number 79 we had with Deanne Chapman, covered dogs. We talked about abuse, diet, grooming, obedience, potty training, and even rescuing dogs from animal shelters throughout the U.S. Did you listen to this show, Ricky?
I did, and I'll be honest, it was a difficult show to listen to in some respects because Deanne talks about what it can be like in some of these animal shelters, and it sort of makes me want to say, I'll go take all the dogs home. I may not have room for them, but I don't want to see them in the conditions that they're experiencing now. So again, there were some difficult parts of the show, but with that said, there were also parts where Deanne gave some excellent advice about obedience, whether your dog is a pet or a service animal, and information about diet, a lot of stuff I did not know. And it's very well worth the listen, whether you have a service animal or just a pet dog. I think you'll learn a lot from this show.
And Tech Chat number 80, we spoke with Brad Hodges and Michael Barber. It's our This Month in Access Tech, and it was for November 2010. A lot of great information there. I would encourage everyone to give that a listen as well. There's some interesting innovations going on in access technology and mainstream technology that will benefit us as well. Advanced Cellular Technology, Inc. has filed an application with the U.S. Federal Drug Administration, FDA, seeking permission to begin the first phase of testing stem cell-based treatments for macular degeneration. They say it is a $25 to $30 billion marketing opportunity. Well, that's one way to get support.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that there's currently no forms of FDA-approved treatments for the most common form of dry macular degeneration. And here's the controversial part, is that the way they want to go is transplanting human embryonic stem cells, which is a real button pusher for some folks. Now, I know, you know, we can do transplants of our own cells from one part of our body to another, and there's been some amazing healing processes there, but when you get into the embryonic stem cells, that gets a lot of people in an uproar. So maybe I'll keep my comments to myself on that, because I do have a little different take, I think, than most people. But it says that the FDA has already approved a similar process for treating juvenile macular degeneration. So we'll follow that and let you know what's going on there.
I just think it's fascinating that I believe this makes the fourth podcast where we have talked about advancements in curing blindness. So obviously, there are a lot of advancements being made in this field.
And that's something we talked about in Tech Chat 80, is that's great as long as you don't put your life on hold to start waiting for these. You need to go on and make the most out of every day of your life. And then if these advancements come along and give you at least some partial or usable vision, then great. It's a tool that you can add to your arsenal. But there's a lot of concern that people get their hopes up and then just wait for this miracle to come down the pike.
Yeah, and that's incredibly detrimental, I think.
Massachusetts Institute for Technology, also known as MIT, asks the question, can the brain of blind persons learn to see later in life? This is something that came up earlier, that even if we were to have our eyesight restored, our brain wouldn't know what to do. That part of the brain would not have developed to process all of this information to really make use of it. And I wonder if that's one of those things where it would for some people and maybe not for others, or, you know, people had some vision their first 3 years of life, at least when that part of the brain was developing.
The article does state that the survey is primarily done with children who were born with cataracts, meaning that there is some signal going from the eye to the brain, even though it's not actual sight. It's maybe, you know, some fuzzy light perception or something that's coming through those cataracts. So the brain has received some visual information despite not being able to make sense of it. And I'm wondering if that is what then makes it possible for these children referenced in the article, whenever they get their cataracts removed, to eventually learn to see. And what happens is that the cataracts come off and they start out seeing maybe fuzzy shapes and sort of kaleidoscopic colors going across their field of vision, but nothing that initially makes sense. And it's only over time that the brain learns to process that.
Well, that's interesting because the first 6-7 years of my life, I did have a cataract over the right eye. It was still there until the eye was removed, but I was able to see light, but no real images of any sort. But who knows, maybe images or the ability to process those was implanted into the brain. So for those of you who like to stay up on it, there's a lot of good information. So go over to serotalk.com and read articles that we posted again here today, as well as previous podcasts that we've done. Of course, you can always search the page as well. AT&T says that Google isn't the only company working on some cool speech and voice recognition technology. They said not all of these things will make it out of the lab, but they're working on some really cool stuff. One is called iWalk. It is a navigation service that will be offering directions and feedback to those who are blind or have low vision. All these projects come under the umbrella of a technology they call Watson. And it's also being used for self-voicing RSS and ebook reading technologies. Something called iRemote that may work on an iDevice, one of Apple's products, or other smartphones. That would be an app that would allow people to search through your TV program guides. And you could even say things like, search for Obama joke on Jay Leno 2 weeks ago. So it's the whole concept of basically indexing TV and other spoken content, which would be awesome. I mean, I would love to have that even for our deafblind audience if I could run a piece of software. I looked at one, actually, but it's just too expensive to go through our podcasts and tech chats and create text archives that could be searchable so that people could either jump to that specific segment or at least make this available in Braille for deafblind persons. So,
exactly. They are actually using this as an automated closed captioning feature, or at least they're intending to do that.
Right. That's one of the things it talks about. It says iMiracle can transcribe speech from live TV and basically add closed captioning to it and even index it for later searching. So that's what that's called, iMiracle. There's a voicemail to text feature, a piece of software app that they're writing that they claim is more accurate than any current technology available on the market. Oh, here's one. Here's a must-have, iPizza, that lets you choose complex toppings from a menu. So,
yeah, you just better hope it doesn't misrecognize something and you end up with olives, jalapenos, and anchovies instead of whatever you actually ordered.
No anchovies, please.
Or maybe you do want to order olives and anchovies.
Did you say no anchovies, please?
good point. You know, I'm weird. I'd rather eat the anchovies but skip the olives. So a lot of people.
Yeah,
probably disagree.
I'm with you there. You know, olives can be rearranged to spell so vile, and I have to agree.
Well, in addition to the NFB's Blind Driver Challenge, and of course, a story that we did earlier on what Google's doing as far as self-driving vehicles, European government has backed a project called SARTER. And this is to test various technologies for vehicles, allowing them to drive themselves. And now, see, that's great what the NFB is doing, but I like approaching it from a mainstream. You improve it for all, for sighted folks, and then the blind folks benefit, as opposed to creating something blindness specific. But some of the benefits they say will be improving traffic times, reducing accidents, improving fuel consumption, even lowering CO2 emissions. But they're coming to the end of the first of this 3-year phase program. Basically, what they're doing is creating a lead car and then a following car. So this is a slightly different approach than I'm aware of that others are taking with this, but now they're deploying the sensors and vehicle-to-vehicle communications. The first test could begin this month in December 2010. What they're talking about are actually creating vehicle trains. So basically, they will have a lead vehicle and then a following vehicle. And then in 2011, 2012, they plan to go to actually creating vehicle trains of 5 vehicles, with one actually in the lead. So this raises some interesting thoughts in my mind. First off, would you be interested in that? Imagine you were in a vehicle that basically technology used to follow. So maybe the person in front actually was sighted and your vehicle simply followed them to get from point A to point B.
I can see some issues with that. You know, if somebody swerves to avoid something in the road that they thought they saw and it wasn't really there, and then your car swerves in somewhat the same way, but not exactly, and you could be fishtailing or whatever because you tried to reproduce whatever this other car did. I don't think it would work as well to be following something as it would to actually have rules for the car itself to follow and sort of behavior that it understands and knows how to compensate for.
Well, it did say that it will include interactions with other drivers who are not a part of the vehicle train, but you're right. What if someone cuts in front of, and so the vehicles are no longer in line with each other? It'd have to be some technology that would allow them to maybe synchronize again at some point.
There appear to be several of these self-driving car projects going on. I hope that these groups will eventually collaborate and learn from each other and share ideas rather than each going off on a different tangent, neither of which may work very well.
Well, yeah, that goes either way. You hope they'll share technology, but also it's good to have independent projects because they may be using different technologies and have different findings as a result. But I have one five-word solution.
Put down the cell phone.
There you go.
The FCC is taking comments through December 7th, and this is important. Time is limited here as you're listening to this, because that's Tuesday, so many people won't even hear the podcast till after the fact. But they're taking comments on the recently passed 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, and to our knowledge, no comments have been received from blind persons thus far. So
speak up, people.
Speak up. Well, I mean, at first, we didn't know they were taking comments, so I will take part of the blame on that. Maybe, you know, there should have been some Twitter posts or something back in the day. But we do have a link at serotalk.com. Jamal Masri has compiled a .zip file with everything you would ever need to know. But as Brad Hodges pointed out, it doesn't have to be that complicated. You can go to FCC.gov and search for that and just submit your comments. But it's nice to do things proper, and, you know, government has their ways of doing things. So Jamal has this file, and you can get a link directly from serotalk.com and check that out. The Federal Trade Commission wants to put no tracking capabilities into your browser, and they want it to happen pronto, ASAP. So my question is, does the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, really even have the power or authority to mandate something like that? That's an organization that's always interested me because, you know, I did work with them in the confines of my job with the Better Business Bureau, and they make all these rulings that they really don't have the authority to make, but they seem to be respected enough that they're allowed to do that. So they're saying, hey, there should be no tracking. You should be able to browse independently without someone monitoring where you go and what you do.
Yeah, they don't want people to be able to push targeted advertising at you based on your online behavior and tracking where you've been and what you do. I don't think they have the ability to enforce this, but they can make it a strong suggestion. And as you said, Michael, their rulings do seem to be respected, whether they actually have the power to legally enforce these things or not. People tend to follow suit.
Yes, indeed. A Canadian court rules that the federal government in Canada has 15 months to make their websites more accessible to the blind. And you can read that article over at serotalk.com. This is very important. I think it's important for all of us to take time and fill out these different screen readers when it comes to access technology. And this particular one from WebAIM out in Utah has to do with your choice and use of screen reading technology. Ricky, I'm sure you filled it out. I did as well.
I have indeed. This is the third year that they're conducting this survey, and I remember not so fondly the first year that they did this. System Access was not present at all, and I don't recall if it was last year or not, but I do remember it, in at least one instance, a lot of people had to do write-ins that they were using System Access. But this is important for a couple of reasons. One, it's important to let people know that there is more than one screen reader being used by blind people. I chose that I used VoiceOver and NVDA and System Access. And it's going to be able to track things like the fact that we aren't necessarily a one screen reader society anymore. I think a lot of people use more than one. And it does also ask questions about various web accessibility practices, such as the use of ARIA landmarks and quick navigation links and things like that, and it wants to track how useful these things are and how many people are actually taking advantage of these various things.
Yeah, it talked about things like Long Desk, which I understand was just dropped from the spec for
HTML5. Yeah.
Right. So, but fill that out, and of course, there's an option if you don't know what they're referring to, you can simply state that as well, because part of it, it's a little geeky, but it's good questions to ask, and it doesn't take long to do, and it's very user friendly, and just choose your options from the drop downs or check the appropriate boxes, and you're on your way, and you're helping make a difference. APH is offering free download editions of Reader's Digest and Newsweek to eligible readers. So you can get the link at serotalk.com and see if you're one of those eligible folks to take advantage of that.
Yep. If you're an NLS patron, you should be eligible. This is material that used to be sent out on cassette, and now you can get it as a digital download. Although you don't get it from the NLS Bard site, you do need to download this directly from APH, and you'll just create an account there, and off you go.
And also, Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic has some new software player that works both Windows and Macintosh for the books available from RFBND. So a lot of new options for reading those their books. Speaking of books, Terry Hayes Sayles, who recorded over 900 books for the blind, dies at the age of 94.
This is certainly a sad day. I think many of us grew up listening to Terry Hayes Sayles. She actually began recording when they were using wax cylinders back in 1938, I believe, and then she progressed all the way through each of these formats that NLS recorded in, and she did record digitally as well. So she will certainly be missed.
Most definitely. We always like to tell you of new podcasts we find. This is one I haven't listened to yet, but there's a podcast demonstrating some of the features of the Cobra screen reader developed by Baum. I don't even know anything about Cobra.
I don't either. The only thing I knew was that Cobra exists, and I plan to check out this podcast. And there's another one done by the same individual detailing basic functionality of NVDA.
Right, and they're calling it part one, so there will be more, I guess, released on that front. So you can get those links at serotalk.com. Microsoft has a patent on bringing Braille to tablets.
Yeah, this is fairly interesting. And what they're saying is that this is only going to be applicable to the large screen tablets. So you're not going to see this on, say, a touchscreen mobile phone. But what they're hoping to do is be able to bring Braille to these types of devices. And it's not going to be using the traditional piezoelectric cells, which may or may not mean that implementing this is a bit less expensive than the traditional method of making Braille displays. No idea when this is actually going to come to fruition. They're pretty close-mouthed about that. They're just saying it's going to happen in the future.
Well, Apple has so many patents on touchscreen technology that I'm curious if that conflicts and if we will actually see Microsoft and Apple at some day fight over patents. That should be very interesting. But another related item, an experimental program for blind users of Windows 7 touchscreens based on the Seeing with Sound model, basically using audible tones to get different information from the screen.
Have you ever played with that? This is based on the, there's a program called VOIC. And basically the way that it works is you can give it an image and it will try to translate that image into something audible. Now, my poor little brain was not able to really make a lot of sense of any pictures that I gave VOIC to translate into something audible. It sounded very cool, but it didn't really give me a lot of information. But the way that this is meant to work is that you get a compatible Windows 7 touchscreen, and as you move around on the surface, for example, if you were to move horizontally, you would hear a certain tone going from left to right, and the same is true vertically. And so I guess eventually you could train your brain to interpret things like a graph or a diagram, which was displayed on this touchscreen, and as you traced it, you would get information about it.
Yeah, I did play with that VOIC app for my Nokia N82, but it never quite worked right. But yeah, I think it's trying to send out too much information. It seems like a cool idea, and I'm sure if we played with it enough, we could learn to hone in on the tones and get some useful data. I don't see it as useful for pictures as maybe detecting things like distance between objects or a hole in the ground or something like that. You know, I still like the sonar cane technology concept. So we'll have to see, how that works in the confines of touch screens. I would rather have something tactile, but I guess if it was audible, it might be a better tool for traveling so your hands are free. So we'll just have to see what, if anything, comes of that technology. Thanks to a lead from Dean Martineau, we did find some free Office 2010 training materials in PowerPoint format, also stuff for 2007 and 2003. So I haven't looked through them to gauge the accessibility or usefulness of the content, but link is there for you at serotalk.com if that is of use to you, if you are a trainer or just trying to help yourself get up to speed or find some hidden aspects of Office 2010, 2007, or 2003. Well, some have asked, what is Code Factory going to do with the inaccessibility of Windows Mobile 7? Well, right now, Code Factory has released Mobile Speak 4.60 for Symbian, adding support for these maps, and you can read more about that. I used an older version of Mobile Speak under Symbian. It wasn't that stable, but I understand it has greatly improved since then. Well, looks like Verizon is ready to roll out their 4G, their LTE on December 5th. Looks like plans start at $50, but just to get 10 gig, you're going to have to pay $80 a month, and the whole point of getting something like that is for the speed, and it assumes you're going to transfer some data and watch some videos. So even 10 gig could be quickly gobbled up with things like Netflix. I wonder how much one movie
is. Yeah, I do too, and I suppose one could find out by looking at the data and watching a Netflix movie on your phone and then looking at your data plan again to see just how much that took up. But speaking of phones, there aren't actually any handsets that support this yet through Verizon. So you're just looking at wireless broadband and not smartphones at this point for this plan.
Good point. I thought there was one phone out, but maybe I'm confusing with Sprint.
Yeah, I think there is one phone out, and I think it is from Sprint. So yeah, I don't believe Verizon is offering anything at all just yet.
Well, last podcast, Joe Steinkamp did a great segment talking about Spiel. A new Spiel FAQ has been released talking about some shortcomings of Spiel, and maybe not so much that as much as the Google API that it has to work with to make it talk, but you can get that link at serotalk.com.
Right. This is actually written by the Spiel developer, and he's just sort of answering questions that he gets frequently about why doesn't Android do this, or are you going to develop a way for Android to do that? And he explores the reasons why or why not, as far as whether those things are going to happen or not.
Well, we've already seen iOS 4.21, and it's saying that 4.3 will be out hopefully pretty soon, maybe as early as middle December. We'll have to wait and see on that. But one of its features is going to be in-app subscriptions. Services like newspapers or TV or radio or that sets up a great model because you can initially offer something for free to get people to install the app and then sell content or services. Music services. Let's not forget music services. iTunes, Apple bought La 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 La, millions of songs there. Takes forever to load those PDF files that Apple creates, so they've created RTF files for a voiceover getting started for new users, conversion of iPhone 4 manual from PDF to RTF, and Apple's diverse learners PDF, now in RTF format. You can get those links at serotalk.com if you like having it in that rich text format. Yay.
And guess what that was converted with?
Would that be DocuScan Plus?
It would indeed.
Ah, cool stuff. Thanks to David Woodbridge for doing that. I grabbed those RTFs, a bit smaller than the PDF and much quicker to load.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's what we've got from here. Stay tuned for other cool segments and tech chats coming up as well. December 9th, we'll be finding out what's new with NFB Newsline. They got a cool service that's actually been out for a while called NFB Potable. And if you don't mind going through a page with a couple hundred links, you can actually make a very customized newspaper with both your local, state, and national news, as well as some national magazines. But they're also rolling out a career-based service with job postings. So join us for Tech Chat 81 on December 9th for that. and our next podcast on the 20th. And, of course, coming soon will be our end-of-the-year bloopers, things that we said that you didn't hear the first time, but you might hear at the end of the year.
Things that should have stayed in the vault, but won't. See you in a couple of weeks, folks. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Cerro Talk. Visit us at www.cerrotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@cerrotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.